I'm Kimmy Eisel, a visiting artist from Tucson, Arizona, at the Island Institute in Sitka, Alaska. I've been enchanted by the landscape and people of Southeast Alaska. This is my story about listening to yellow cedar. I came from a hot, dry place, the Sonoran Desert, to Southeast Alaska to live for 2 months as an artist in residence in Sitka. When I got here, I wanted to know who lived here. Not just the barista, the librarian, other artists, but the salmon, brown bear, and the Sitka spruce. Because I believe that plants and animals, they're important members of a community too. In the desert, I'd been exploring my relationship with the saguaro cactus, that iconic Southwest species, trying to figure out all the ways to duet with it. Part of my investigation involved standing next to one for an hour. I invited others to do the same. The saguaro had things to say, and we listened. So when a friend of a friend in Sitka introduced me to yellow cedar, Calotropis nutcatensis, a tree in the cypress family that can grow for more than 1,000 years in the coastal temperate rainforests of Alaska and British Columbia, I thought, wow, I want to know more. Well, do it while you can, my friend said, because around here, yellow cedar has been dying off for the last 100 years or more, more precipitously since the 1970s, because of climate change. In areas of coastal Southeast Alaska and British Columbia, scientists have found some 250,000 hectares of concentrated mortality, between 70 to nearly 100% of mature yellow cedar trees in those declining forests are dead. I thought about what it means for a place to lose one of its community members, or many. I wanted to get to know this special tree.
One of the things that makes it a special tree, actually, there's a couple of them. The whole form of the needles is really different than it is with most conifers.
That's Kitty Labounty, a botanist at University of Alaska, Southeast.
You can tell the spruce from the hemlock because the spruce, of course, you grab it and it hurts. And the hemlock looks like a little flattened out sort of a bird feathery sort of aspect. But the cedar, the little needle leaves are overlapped. So you don't see quite, you know, the individual needle so much. You see this fan of needles. So it has a different look to it if you look up close. And then as you look at it from a distance, it has these kind of elegant, I think elegant, looking droopy. You can think of it like a lady's sleeves. You know, if you have big droopy sleeves, that's kind of what it looks like to me.
That's what it looks like to me, too. Plus, yellow cedar has the most amazing bark, long strips like soft fibrous paper or fabric. Both the wood and the bark have been used by native peoples in this region for hundreds of years to make canoes, paddles, masks, bowls, baskets.
My name is Heather Powell, and I am a Chukansha, which is a woman of the Chukanady clan, and I come from the Yellow Cedar House.
Heather Powell is the Director of Language and Education for Sitka Tribe of Alaska and co-director of the Sitka Native Education Center.
Tlingit people, for time immemorial, have always spoke of Asquani. For us, this is, you know, the people of the trees, the spirit of the trees. And trees are such an important part of everything that we do in everyday life that we really do think of them as their own people. Throughout the time that we're harvesting roots, harvesting bark, while we're cutting a tree, we have a ceremony that goes with those things. We speak to those things. We speak to the Asquani, telling them, Gunalchish and Chadechatnau, you know, forgiving us. And that comes into when we're using our chai, we're using it for our carvings, for our canoes, for our basketries, for our ropes, you know, for our utilitarian needs. We're weaving them into the blankets that tell the stories of our life, that tell the stories of where we've come from. For myself, I have a special relationship with yellow cedar. I have a relationship with it because it's the beginning of where we come from. The roots of that tree describe every single name in my family. The roots of that tree have been on the land that my ancestors have fought to protect.
Can you tell me the word for yellow cedar and how to say it?
Chai.
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 Yeah, that's yellow cedar. So I come from Chai Hit, which is the yellow cedar house.
So many people I met in Sitka love the yellow cedar. The branches, the bark, the smell. Woodworkers and carvers talk about the tree's durability and resistance to decay. People use it in home interiors, for staircases and trim, and outside for decks. Just the other day I heard about someone now using yellow cedar to make coffins. I learned, too, that animals also love yellow cedar. Deer browse its saplings, and bears. Well, let's let the writer and anthropologist Richard Nelson tell us what bears like.
In the springtime, when the sap is flowing in the cedar trees, the brown bears have learned, in this part of the world anyway, and have limited, not everywhere that yellow cedars grow, but in a certain part where they figured it out, other brown bears haven't figured it out, and they don't do it, about stripping the bark off yellow cedar trees in spring and licking the sap.
We walked along Indian River, not far from town.
Well, it's kind of fun to just take a step and watch your entire foot disappear.
Yeah.
Walking with Nels is like putting your senses on steroids. He notices everything and knows how it's all connected.
There's a yellow cedar right there. I was just looking to see if there was one listening. The salmon.
Yeah, he's leaning in a little bit.
He's leaning in. The salmon require the forest to create the kind of water that they need in order to live. So salmon are, in that sense, produced by the forest and the muskegs, like this boggy muskeg we're looking at right now. This is essential to the lives of salmon because it filters the water and it keeps the water cool and, you know, this whole ecosystem here. These fish are partly a gift from yellow cedar. I mean, yellow cedar are integrated completely into the world of salmon here.
What is it like? I hear people saying, yeah, the salmon is in the trees.
It works the other way around, too, as you might know, that when these salmon come up and they die, then their bodies bring in all these organic nutrients from the distant reaches of the ocean, from 1,000 or 2,000 miles out in the ocean where these salmon are nurtured. Their bodies are like a little delivery system for nutrients from the ocean. So they come in, and as they die and decompose, and as their bodies and parts of their bodies are carried off into the land, or as birds like eagles and gulls eat them and fly off and poop on the ground, or the otters and the brown bears and everything that feeds on the salmon, they keep moving these nutrients. And it might not seem like much on the basis of a single year. You'd say, oh, come on, really? So, yeah, there's a little bit of poop here and there's some salmon carcasses. But if you multiply it by tens of thousands of years, every single year, it's this brilliant process or interconnected thing where salmon help to nurture the forest that nurtures them in return. It's just the most beautiful cyclic reciprocity and completely invisible if you're not paying attention.
Right. The amazing act of paying attention. So it's pretty unanimous. Almost everyone in Southeast Alaska loves yellow cedars or depends upon them for their continuity. But the trees are dying. And before I get to why that is, here's a little biology about Calotropis nutcatensis. One interesting thing about yellow cedar is that for a long time at least, it was adapted to thrive in muskegs and areas with poorly drained soils. They could survive there because they have a greater proportion of shallow roots than their competitors. As the yellow cedar takes up nitrate from the thin top layer of soil, it also does this other cool thing to balance out that nutrient uptake, which is that it takes in more calcium than it needs and transports that calcium to its leaves, which then fall back to the soil in something called foliage rain. So it's like the tree has its very own healthy feedback loop. The increased calcium in the soil raises the pH and promotes nitrification in the shallow upper areas of the soil. But now, or rather over the past century, those wet, low-lying muskegs have become, well, less healthy. even dangerous for the yellow cedar. Paul Hennen is a plant pathologist with the U.S. Forest Service in Juneau and one of the experts on the yellow cedar decline.
When I first came here in 1981, I was really struck by the yellow cedar tree death, how widespread and kind of intensive it was. And at that time, I really had no idea what was causing it. So I was first thinking that this was probably going to be a kind of a classic tree disease caused by a fungus. And to make a long story short, we really made more progress when we started forming a research team with scientists from other disciplines like soils and hydrology and plant physiology. By taking that approach, I guess a broader approach, and a lot of clues from the landscapes, we finally settled on a much more promising point of view about why the cedars were dying. Yellow cedar is particularly sensitive to freezing. So the fine roots, the little feeder roots that are about an eighth of an inch in diameter or smaller, those are quite sensitive to cold temperatures. And so we learned that the yellow cedars are injured and then begin to die during cold periods in the late winter and early spring. And this is a time when the yellow cedars are becoming physiologically active because the days are getting longer. The injury occurs, especially when there's cold weather that drifts from the interior of British Columbia over the panhandle.
The groundbreaking findings of Paul Hennen and his team have informed the way botanists and other scientists think about this issue. Here's botanist Kitty LeBounty.
It's vulnerable to cold, but it's vulnerable to that cold and freezing only in certain conditions. So if you see the trees on well-drained sites, you don't have the same issues. They become more vulnerable in areas where there is too much water in the soil as well. So it's wet, they break dormancy, yeah, they die, they freeze because there's not the snow cover.
So the tree is dying because there's not enough snowpack to insulate its roots from the cold. And there's not enough snowpack because of a warming climate in the region. The warming is happening because of natural climatic cycles and also because of greenhouse gas emissions. In Southeast Alaska, this trend means warmer winters and more rain, not snow.
And I suppose that's one of the reasons that it took a while for us to figure this out. It's not very immediately intuitive that we're talking about a freezing injury to trees in a warming climate.
For climate change advocates, we often rely on symbols to communicate the impacts of climate change to people. You know how the polar bear is a symbol of climate change up in the Arctic? Here in Southeast Alaska, for many of us, yellow cedar trees are a symbol of the devastating impact that climate change is having on our planet.
That's Sophie Nethercutt, a staff member at the Sitka Conservation Society. In June of this year, several other environmental groups and a nonprofit educational cruise operator petitioned the federal government to get yellow cedar listed as an endangered species. That petition is currently under review by the Fish and Wildlife Service. When I asked Paul Hennen about this, he told me the one thing that seems clear right now is that the yellow cedar's range will change. If the species survives, it might only grow at higher elevations or at higher latitudes, while in other places, the coastal muskegs, its mortality is long-term and continuing. The Forest Service has responded to yellow cedar decline in several ways. When thinning forest stands, it has begun to favor yellow cedar trees, meaning leaving them standing, and is also considering introducing red cedar in some areas. But, of course, red cedar isn't the same as yellow cedar. They have similarities, but you can't really replace one species with another. The Forest Service has also been experimenting with something called assisted migration. Patrick Hewer, a silviculturist, told me they started an experiment with assisted migration 6 or 7 years ago, planting yellow cedar in Yakutat, some 230 miles northwest of Sitka, where a few stands of the tree existed and where they expected it to do well.
We go back and check on them every couple of years to kind of monitor them, see how they're doing, and they're doing good. And it kind of helps us to, if we wanted to do more assisted migration planting, it kind of gives us an idea of what it might involve, what it would take. And so it's not something that we were looking at doing on any sort of a large scale, but it was kind of a trial thing just to help us get a feel for whether it's something that we might consider as conditions maybe warrant.
Mm-hmm. I'm Kimmy Eisel, a visiting artist in residence in Sitka, Alaska. You're listening to my story about yellow cedar, an important species now in decline in coastal Alaska. I'm thinking about what loss means in a single place. Sure, a species might survive as a whole, but what does it mean for a community to lose some of its own? In this case, trees that help tie people in very strong linguistic, cultural, and even spiritual ways to where they live. This past August, before I arrived in Sitka, heavy rains resulted in landslides in the forest right at the edge of town. Three people died in one of those landslides, and the town has been mourning those losses. In a small community, everyone knows everyone, so to lose three men, the grief is real. Terry Rothkar, an Alaska Native artist in Sitka, felt deeply the loss of both human lives and trees.
And everybody in town was so just devastated, and there was such an edginess to everybody, and everybody was sort of impacted so much. And I talked to Violet, and I said, Violet, was this like? She said, Grandma, the trees! And I'm like, that's exactly what I thought of as well. But you know, those trees, when they came down, as soon as I saw what was going on, I knew they were no longer trees. They were logs. They had come from a long ways up, even if you couldn't see it in the fog. But what I realized is there was a lot of death that happened in such a close proximity. And whether you're intuned or not, you couldn't help but be impacted on some level to the loss that we had.
Terry has a strong relationship with the trees because she uses cedar bark in her work as a weaver, basket maker, and textile artist. When she talks about the trees, she stresses a kind of reverence that makes them more than just raw materials.
One of the words that's used a lot is resource, which is, I think it's a word of economics and finances. It has no tie-in with the end materials. So it's a resource. In other words, you're just going to take it to someplace else or sell it or something like that. So if you replace that word with relationship, because we do have a relationship with the trees and the fish, and it doesn't mean that we're just, you know, preserving them. It's not at all, because we have to use some of those things in order to survive ourselves. But with respect to their life cycle and continued health, you know, it's mm-hmm. a relationship. Mm-hmm. And it can be, you know, like any other relationship, just a bit messy. It's not quantifiable. But I always try to use that word rather than yellow cedar, spruce. None of those are resources for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I have a relationship with them.
I asked Terry about how she approaches the trees before harvesting their bark.
Before you went into the woods, you always addressed as a whole the area. You know, you spoke to the tree people, hoping that the inconvenience, you know, and the discomfort that we cause is not undue, and explain somewhat of what we're going to do. And many times I'm having to explain that it's not going to be beautiful baskets right away. It's going to be teaching the young ones, or it's going to be teaching others. Many times we're displacing deer or bear. Bear, mostly you want to address them right up front, because we are not the top of the food chain. So I am Duck Dang Tan. I am a raven. So Jay's Gul Claw is my Tlingit name. And I'm the daughter of a raven and granddaughter of the Kagwantan wolf. So I have relationships. My relationship to the bears, I always have to explain that it's okay, I'm your grandchild. You know, so it's one of those, again, the relationships of who we are.
I wondered how the yellow cedar die-off was affecting her work.
You know, I have actually made a conscious effort not to harvest cedar as much, because it does impact the life of the tree.
And then sometimes the forest leaves unexpected gifts.
I know at one point I took an entire group of young people from the Sitka Native Education Program. we talked to the trees and we made a big introduction and apology to the bears to, you know, we weren't going to be too long. We hiked way up the mountain, took most of the day to get there. And in the area where I wanted to harvest, there happened to be a huge yellow cedar that had been blown down. And its roots were up in the air and the whole tree was laying down in this really steep zone. But because it had just happened that winter, it was still alive. It still had sap running. So we were able to sing and embrace the tree, and the young people harvested all the bark off of it because it was already, it was almost like, you know, in that context of the native culture, is it had presented itself for us. I mean, it was there waiting for us to come and harvest the bark. It was just, I'd never had that happen before.
We're on the upper cross trail at the tent platform. We're standing next to about a 90-year-old yellow cedar, hearing what it hears.
Robert Woolsey is the news director of KCAW Raven Radio. I figured he's listened to just about everyone's story in Sitka at some point. So I asked him if he'd be willing to trek up the mountain with a microphone and help me listen to the trees.
You know what we're hearing? We're hearing the echo of the stream coming off the tree.
Oh. A week later, I took a small group of curious Sitkins, including Nootka, a dog named after Nootkatensis, part of the scientific name for yellow cedar, to the same spot up Gavin Trail. Once we got to the tent platform, I invited everyone to play along and go stand in silence with a cedar tree of their choice for a few minutes, witnessing, listening. I climbed up off the trail to an older cedar on a steep slope and stood at what Terry Rothkar calls the belly of the tree.
So when you're on a really steep elevation, if you look at the trees, all of the branches are reaching out towards the light. So when you hike up to the upper part and look up the tree, there are no branches on that side of the tree that's against the hillside. And so that's kind of the belly of the tree. How many times in this area I've walked up and found a beautiful tree, walked to the, climbed up to the belly of the tree, and it's already been pulled sometimes many, many years prior.
The tree I was standing near seemed really old and really wise, and I felt lucky that I'd found it.
We're looking over Swan Lake, except it's completely socked in. And we have Nootka, the yellow lab, who is finally sitting down. And we've just come from 10 to 12 minutes of standing next to a yellow cedar. And we are going to report back what we heard and what we saw.
I found one with a really nice arc to it, and it was like a very comforting shape, and I just rested my head along it and listened and closed my eyes for a while. It's very soft and like inviting. And then I started looking at the little landscapes of bark and all the interesting lichens and different other critters growing on it. And just like the soft quality that was like gentle and quiet.
I sat there and the tree kind of said, "You found me." And then I kind of wondered, sitting there, how long it had been there, and I wanted to ask this tree questions about what it's been through, what it's seen, and who its friends were that were growing there around it. And I didn't get too many answers from the tree, but I thought maybe if I sat here long enough, I'd get some.
Yeah, lovely.
I asked Paul Hennen, the expert in yellow cedar decline, why it matters that some communities along the Pacific coast might be losing the tree.
In coastal Alaska, we only have a handful of tree species, so that makes every one of them valuable. If we only have, you know, five or six main forest tree species and one of them starts to die, well, we've lost a high percentage of our trees, I guess. And then another thing about the cedars is these are really ancient trees. They come from the cypress family, and there are fossils of trees that look very much like red and yellow cedar that have been on Earth for 100 million years or longer. actually occurred at the same time as the dinosaurs were on Earth.
Of course, for Alaska Natives like Heather Powell, this loss is about family.
I've had the opportunity to spend significant amounts of time with my grandparents. And I remember them saying they will try the best that they can to prepare us for what's to come. And so when you hear about the things that have been predicted, it's scary. It's scary to think about the things that they knew were coming and trying to focus on the teachings that they gave in anticipation of those things. So for me to hear that there's a possibility that the snowpack affecting the roots of the Chai, it's devastating. It leaves a heavy heart. You know, it's not only the yellow cedar that is in danger, it's just a glimpse into the future of what we really truly have to be protecting. And I remember losing my grandma and thinking, she'll be here in this journey that we're taking. We'll be taking it together. It'll just be a different way.
I feel lucky I got to meet and know the yellow cedar, that I got to be for a time a member of its community. It's hard to reconcile this with the knowledge that my time on Earth as a human has in some way contributed to a warming climate that makes trees like yellow cedar vulnerable to decline. I try to find new ways to care about the most vulnerable. I try to think like a tree, or like a friend of the tree, or like a salmon, or a bear. And when I walk in the woods, I try to imagine what it would be like to stand in one beautiful place for 1,000 years.
Look upon a field of snow and find the desert sea.
Listening to the Yellow Cedar was written, recorded, and produced by Kimmy Eisel, a visiting artist with the Rasmussen Resident Artist Program and the Island Institute in Sitka, Alaska, with production help from Robert Woolsey and Rebecca Dannon, and special thanks to Raven Radio, KCAW, in Sitka.
To the ridge of Niagara, collapse upon the fall. Falling down upon your knees, and thorium lacrimae decays underneath the canopies like a natural disaster, a disaster. It's the one that's been happening over and over and over again. Peace in the valleys, malarial alleys, where the kittens of pleurisy. Donning our goggles, valerian ogles, to see microscopically. Colony of domestids, undressed and digested, a gray-spotted owl, and a wolf with a lung disease. Oh,